Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. Good evening, Council. So we got this exciting project we're bringing back to you as library workforce housing. So on the agenda today, I'm going to talk to you for a couple of minutes just to kind of update Council how we got to where we are today, kind of a recap, if you will. And then we're really hoping to get some direction from City Council about, you know, moving forward from here, right? So we're going to, you know, talk to you a little bit, and then we're going to kind of turn it back over to you guys to talk about this. And then some of the other bigger questions are how we address affordability. Should this project, assuming you want to move forward, of course, have an affordability element to it? You know, would it be a mix of market rate and a mix of affordability? And I've got some more slides to kind of help you through that process. And then we also have this other tool in our toolbox that we've never used before. We've explored it a little bit. It's called TIF, or Tax Increment Financing. So this would be a great opportunity to help fund improvements related to like a library or community center down there. And the time to implement that tool would be before we start, you know, building the other building. So basically earlier in the process. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about that. So that's kind of the agenda. You know, you feel free to jump in with questions, or I can just go through the PowerPoint and turn it over to Council. So we'll get going from there. All right, so this is the property downtown. The city's been working for a while to kind of to redevelop it, but, you know, it is essentially these five bigger pieces, you know, represented by the library. There's a parking lot behind the library, skate park. The city also owns a police station and what we've called the old city hall, which is a gravel lot now. The transfer option agreement that we completed with Colshan is a 3-year transfer option agreement with the potential for 2 1-year extensions, so we could go up to 5 potential years. And it is that area in yellow there, so those kind of the northern three pieces that includes the library, the parking lot, and the skate park site, if you will. And there is some buffer area. We have a salmon bearing stream back there, some things like that, so that we work through the review. So we have some early project concepts. This would be basically where the skate park is located today. And you can see on the bottom floor there is a some kind of community center. This was actually envisioned to be a child care services down here. So that is a component we want to talk to you a little bit about. But, you know, 5-story building, 60 feet tall, meets all the zoning. This is what it could look like. We have a new rendering here. This is the latest rendering. It kind of shows the two buildings in the background, which could be housing, and then a library could be up front. And this kind of demonstrates that you could build the project in phases. In phase one, maybe, is the farthest looking building where the skate park is. A second building could be built in the middle, closer to the parking lot area. And then you could build a new library without disrupting the library in its current location, kind of right in front where the parking lot is essentially today of the library. And this is just a concept, of course, but, you know, we're not really deciding that necessarily today. The library could also be part of, you know, a mixed-use building with, you know, apartments on above, like it's shown in this picture. So these are just project concepts and renderings that as the project's been developed, you know, we've got some nice pictures to go with it. So to recap, we have an excellent team that, you know, we put together. You know, obviously City of Blaine owns the land, and so we would be we're you know, a key partner here. You know, we've talked to Whatcom County and the Whatcom County Library District. From the private sector is Madrona Community Development. That's Paul Schischler, who's here this evening, his firm. You know, we also have an excellent builder in Excel Pacific as a general contractor. Zervis Architect, well-renowned architect there in Bellingham. And Culliver Construction Management is kind of a project developer. So this is the team that's been working to kind of put these concepts together. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what they've accomplished in a couple minutes. And then, you know, private nonprofit, it has been Culshan Community Land Trust, and one of the things we're going to talk about it for a variety of reasons, Culshan has kind of had to take a step back from the project, so we're looking for some direction on what to do next. That's kind of one of the big questions this evening. But this project could be built, and we could ask Culshan to come back at a later date and be a steward of affordability. That we need someone to make sure the units stay affordable over time, if that's what is council wants to see. And then we've had other groups, Mount Baker Foundation, funded feasibility work, and there's been a lot of grassroots. We had a little over a year ago, we had a pretty great presentation right here in the council chambers, and then there was another well-attended presentation at the community center / senior center over there about a year ago. So there's been some engagement with the public. And so that's kind of a little bit about the team. I mentioned the transfer option agreement. This is just kind of going through some of the things that the team has done. We've got the project team established with renderings. The project team did receive a grant of from about $60,000 from the Washington State Department of Commerce for technical assistance. The Mount Baker Foundation also gave $100,000 to the project to work on feasibility. The design team has gone through a feasibility plan, put together cost estimates, so we know we have an idea at least how much this could potentially cost to build. There was a marketing study done, a massing study done to kind of look at the size of the buildings. There was a community survey that was put out for related to home ownership. In addition to that, the team completed an environmental site assessment, for phase one to kind of look at, see if there's any environmental issues on this property that came back clean. So we're in good shape there. We have a critical areas report as it relates to, Cane Creek and the buffers associated with that. That isn't quite finalized yet, but we've done all the difficult legwork so far. It's ready to be finalized pretty much at any moment. We've had, meetings with city staff to look at technical review. I mentioned some of the public engagement, and Madrona Community Development has also, put in a lot of volunteer time and worked on this, kind of moving it along throughout the process. So, in addition to that, we've also looked at zoning quite a bit, right? So, you call the downtown advisory zoning or advisory committee. We updated some parking standards for the Central Business District. We adopted a new parking in lieu program, which no one's quite taken us up on yet. But we also confirmed the height limit. There's a lot of discussion about height limit over various meetings, and we've confirmed the height limit has not changed. It was recommended to stay at 60 feet. So that is the existing height limit, 60 feet. The project is designed to meet that height limit. Some other things have transpired. The Whatcom Housing Alliance, for Whatcom County, got a grant for $200,000, and they hired Econ Northwest to do a study. They were really looking at a multifamily tax exemption, this program the city has to encourage development downtown. But they selected three case studies, it was Ferndale, Blaine, and Bellingham. And so this consultant came in and looked at what it takes for a project to kind of pencil out and get going, and basically they found that developing mixed use projects downtown is very far from penciling out. So even with the incentives that we've provided, unless there's some other way to stimulate development downtown, it's very far from from penciling out, if you will. And we have a full report on that. I can make that available. But the kind of takeaway here is there's no other good examples or comparables. So when people are trying to finance a project to build downtown, like, no one has any new buildings downtown, so there's no other comparables. So this makes it a very challenging financing market. So this program, if it were to move forward, would be an excellent comparable, right? It would say, even at affordable housing, it would show that something could be done downtown. So there is a little bit of economic development stimulus to this project. All right, what else do we got? Since that time, let's see here, we've updated. The RCW's the Washington Code has been amended to clarify that affordable workforce housing and infrastructure can be funded. So what does that mean? Whatcom County's EDI program can pay the city for 100% of impact fees, utility fees, for eligible projects, affordable housing projects, and including land acquisition. So we can get paid for that land, right? We don't have to give it to a nonprofit. And kind of an interesting tidbit there is that their application window opens up later this year. So this is somewhat timely if the city council wanted to move forward and, we were able to work out a few more of these project details and probably have that transfer option agreement assigned or, had a project applicant ready to go, then we could apply for this EDI funding rather soon. So that is new. The big change there is that it confirms that the county EDI program could pay for the land. That's kind of the big addition that's changed since the last time we talked about this, which is great for the city. Okay, so what's kind of happened? How do we get here? So the Culshin CLT's director had to step back. Basically, Dean Fearing retired. Their new director kind of moved in, and they have a whole bunch going on right now. So Culshin said, we're not in a position to try to build a big multifamily development downtown. So at this point, we need to take a step back. So Culshin at this point is saying, we would still like to we're still interested in being a steward of affordability, but at this point, we can't be the lead developer and build the project. Okay, over the last couple of years, the city's coming out of transition with new management. And then I'd also note that we've had changes at the federal government level, which I'm sure you are all aware of, but that's kind of changed some of the funding sources that have been available. So things like community development block grant to develop low-income housing are probably no longer available. So we wouldn't want to try to target federal funding at this time is my point. So what that does is it kind of narrows the affordable housing the spectrum of affordable housing is kind of maybe narrowed up. You don't want to go after that lower stuff quite as much. Also, since we met last, we have a location for the skate park. This has been kind of an issue. Okay, you want to build something right there? Well, the skate park is there. What are you going to do with the skate park? Well, we have the Marine Park Master Plan now, so we do have a solution to replace the skate park with a new bicycle pump track. If not a marine park, it could go, in a different park, but potentially like Lincoln Park, for example. Yes.
Did you just say that the pump track was going to replace the skate park?
Yes, it could.
I don't understand that either.
Well, before we didn't have anything to replace the skate park. If we sold that land, somebody built stuff on it, the skate park would be gone, and we'd have nothing.
Oh, you're saying people could do pump track as an activity rather than do skating as an activity?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Okay,
yes.
That's not quite the same as somebody who owns a skateboard here, so you're replacing the skate park, they're not thinking, now I'll switch to pump track.
Well, yeah, I mean, without getting into Marine Park too much, that facility is not, finalized by any stretch of the imagination, but, there is an option to at least provide something there. Maybe it's open to skateboarders too. I don't know.
Was there something prohibitive about having a skate park at the foot of Lincoln Park, at the flat land in front of Lincoln Park? Was there?
Nope, nothing's stopping us from doing that either, yeah.
And I think the important thing is that a skate park is small enough to be able to find flexible places to go.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah. So we have some space out there.
More flexible.
Okay, so maybe I was out in front on this one a little bit, but my point was is that we do have a recreational facility for that age group that we're targeting. So just moving along here. I wanted to talk about affordability, and I'm going to turn it over to you guys for a minute to ask some tough questions. But When we're looking at, you know, 2024, you know, area median income for a single person, you know, it's $73,900. And then if we look at a family of four, you know, there's these numbers here, right? You know, a little over 84,000 at 80% AMI, about a little over 105,000 at 100%, and a little closer to 127,000 for at a family of four for 120% AMI. So these are typical affordability ranges that I think we've been talking about, like 80%, 100%, 120%. So those keep those numbers in mind. You know, these are working class jobs, you know, right here in the city of Blaine. And if we kind of translate that, you know, another way to think about affordability is, 38% of your income spent on housing, you know, for home ownership, right? So if we plug in like monthly numbers, what that means is, you know, at 80% AMI for a family of four, you're not spending over $2,674 a month on housing. Now that includes, you know, all in on housing, not you know, homeowners association dues, there, everything else, right? So you know, you can see those numbers. These are, you know, those are pretty good monthly mortgage payments right there, right? So that, you know, that's the kind of the people that could potentially be in these different ownership groups. So we can come back to this, but I just
point out that not that long ago it was 30%. Now it's crept up to 38%.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Actually acknowledging that it's taking a bigger chunk.
It is, yeah. That's a pretty big chunk of your monthly or annual income.
And regarding workforce housing, people who are making $15 an hour are pulling in less than $3,000 a month, so that would be more like 80 or 90% of their income to afford some of these figures.
Yeah, well, so these are people making like $30 to $50 an hour, you know,
sure.
That we're talking about the 80 to 120, you know, that lower range would be, you know, a different affordability bracket, of course.
Sure, yeah. Just saying that we have a lot of jobs in this town that are nowhere near that amount of income, and you know, we had a restaurant that at one point couldn't get people to come from Bellingham to work for them because the gas money was too much and it wasn't penciling out. So these are loftier figures than the reality for a lot of people who have a job in this town.
And that was kind of the intent of this slide, is like, you know, if to qualify to live in you know, a condo at, you know, 100% AMI, your family of four, you know, you got to, you know, that's $105,000 a year. That's a pretty good number, right? So
yeah, and we're talking about affordability. So why are we going from the medium up when we should be going from the medium down?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about. That's for you to talk about here in a minute. I just wanted to give you some of these numbers. So when we're talking about, you know, 80, 100, 120%, those are the numbers. So actually, before I did kind of fail to mention one thing. I want to just go back just real quick here. This Whatcom Housing Alliance grant that we got Econ Northwest to study. They were looking at our current rates, the apartment rates and everything. Most of the apartments in general in the downtown area, well, there's not that many, but the market rate is very close to like 100% AMI affordability. So they were saying, if you say I want to require 120% of affordability, that's like over the market rate that people are already charging now for like an older dated apartment, right? But the requirement for a developer to go over, you know, 100% AMI, that is kind of like charging over market rate essentially. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the market rate in Blaine downtown area is very similar to like 100% AMI affordability rate. Okay, let's move this right along here, and I can turn it over to you. So, kind of, so what happens next? So with Colson kind of stepping away, what we're looking for from council at this point is some direction on, do you want to kind of see this project continue to move forward, you know, or not? I mean, I think that's like the first big question. If you're kind of like, you know what, let's just put the pause on this thing. You know, I'm not sure what to do with the city land right now. That's fine, and then we can kind of like stop wasting time on this. But if you want to see it continue moving forward, that would be good to hear. And then we can talk about kind of, you know, trying to figure out what that looks like. And you know, some assumptions, right? So if you want to kind of continue to move forward, like the current group, in current partnership, we need to have an assignment of that transfer option agreement. If Colson's not willing to be that nonprofit, we need to find somebody to be the nonprofit. And Mr. Schischler has proposed a couple options to us, but we wanted to kind of talk to council about that and spend some time talking to you about that. And I think it makes a very big difference if how much affordability you want in this project. If you just want a housing project downtown with no affordability, then we might need to go a different rate, you know, and talk about you going out for a request for proposal. So with the transfer option agreement, the city can set all the terms in there. It's like our discretion to set the prices and terms of how much affordability we want. Those things are undefined. We can come back and work on those to establish those later. We're just looking for some direction from you guys to continue to move forward at this time or not. And if you want to keep moving forward, the partnership will go refine the project, continue to develop like technical information, like we need a topographical survey, we need a geotechnical report, we need a cultural resource study done. You know, so those are kind of some of the next technical things that need to happen. They don't want to do that if the transfer option agreement's not assigned to them. Essentially, they don't have any like vested rights to the property, if you will.
I have a question for Mr. Harmon. I wish Jennifer were here, but can you give me an idea of what the median income is for a city employee?
Won't you be here to say?
I don't know.
Go ahead.
Jennifer's home with sick children. Yeah, that's why we had to cancel the finance report tonight. The median is probably around 80,000. That's what I would say the median is, and that's off the top of my head based on what I know. I would not testify that before.
But going back to our chart where we talked about the median for Blaine at 73.90, and probably a lot of those employees have families and children, so they're going to be more than as an individual. Those people, if they wanted housing downtown close to work, would be looking for something below your median income. So they're going to be affordable housing. So we're going to do this. It needs to be affordable. It needs to be subsidized somehow.
So is that where we're at in the process here, Alex? Or are we at the discussion part yet?
Yeah. Well, look at this. Next slide is, you know, how do we address affordability? You know, what mix do you want to see? Like, I would be looking for council to say, you know, assuming you want to move forward, of course, right? Like, do you want this to be an entire affordable housing development that was like a healthy mix of income levels, say, you know, 80, 100, and with some 120? Or do you want to see like maybe 50-50, maybe 50%, but it's market rate? Maybe, you know, so like that level of kind of input from councils would be really helpful. And then, of course, you know, there's this kind of community civic component, you know. Should we include a child care facility in there? There's a huge need for that, right? And so, you know, what about that? And then, you know, kind of hoping for a little bit of direction on, you know, the tax increment financing. You know, we can develop a proposal later in the year and try to bring it back to council. But, you know, that's a couple steps ahead, but I think before
if we hit the but-for wall, but-for is the legal term for tax increment financing. You're borrowing off of, you're looking at we can't get a project going here, but if we did, then 10 years from now, we'd be making a bunch of property tax from that. So we want to borrow that property tax to make it actually come true using time travel there. And the term that lawyers use is but for. This project would not have happened but for the fact that we went ahead and borrowed off of what the future profits to the city would be for the project being successful. So Alex, I'm just saying, so the question, you know,
yeah,
is if we've reached a, we can almost do this project, but not quite, then that's where tax increment financing could push us into the, across the finish line.
Well, and also, if you build building one first and it's done and occupied, then you go, oh, I got a great idea, let's do tax increment financing now. You just lost that big increment to borrow against, to finance against over time. Yeah.
So why could you, like you started out, it may take off, started out at a higher, you know, and see how it goes. Sell, see if they sell. You know, I just think the Border Patrol customs guys will eat it up if it's the correct price. I mean, we're thinking of a project over there too, but we're just going to start one and see how it goes, you know. I think they'll sell around here. Just, I mean, try to find waterfront this close. You're this close to the water anywhere along the west coast here. This is a good spot.
There was a market study done, and you know, we do think these will be very desirable, sought after, you know, dwellings. So we feel good about
the upper floors would have a view.
Yes.
Okay. So my understanding from Mr. Schisler, when he was helping to guide some of these original drawings for the building there, was having some of the more desirable units. If this were just a for-profit thing, we were trying to make affordable housing. A lot of bucks could be made there, and sort of using you sell some of the upper floors with the great views at the premium market rates, and give them, you know, the deluxe size bathrooms and all that stuff up there, which subsidizes the rest of the building so that we can have more affordable housing, so that people who are doing just our most basic jobs here in this town can live in the same town where they work and not have to drive in from Custer or the county or Bellingham to come and do, you know, basic jobs in this town. And so that mix could still be in play, of course.
Absolutely. I would say, you know, that's kind of the project team to kind of figure that out, and working with, like, you know, the contractor, like, let's say, for example, Excel Pacific in this case, and you know, but yeah, that is a component, absolutely.
I think when this was presented before, we were all in agreement that we definitely wanted it to go ahead, and we were okay with the idea of charging more for the upper level. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of
the
details. Are we all still in favor of the project?
Anybody
opposed to the project?
Well, I want to question this. So, let's just say we approved everything today. From today, how long do you think before they can start that project and go to work?
That's a good question.
I mean, is it
2 years?
2 years?
Probably.
Okay. Somewhere in there, not five.
So in theory, we get this as close to shovel ready as possible, and then it's more appealing, so that if someone such as Mr. Schisler goes and talks to Whatcom Community Foundation or some of these other kind of seeking, you know, funders that have not yet been approached for this particular project, to try and get some seed money to get some of that going, I don't know, the gentleman is not at the podium right now, so we can't get some of the details, but the idea is, though, is to have an attractive, shovel-ready project and find some more funding, or find somebody who can get behind it.
Yeah, well, that is essentially it. Like, we don't have a project right now, because if Colson was still here and they were, you know, wanting to move forward into the transfer option agreement, like, we wouldn't be having this discussion. They would.
How long does that tie us up?
It was a 3-year agreement with 2 1-year extensions, but because we control all the terms, we can basically say, you know what, Colson, we're going to make it a bazillion dollar property, and therefore you can't buy it, so it's canceled. We control all the whole contract, basically. But you know, so I think, you know, kind of maybe following, you know, we're looking for some direction on from council. Do you want to kind of continue with this partnership group? And then what level of affordability would you like to see if you do want to continue moving forward? Are two big questions we would love to hear some hear your input on.
So, Mr. Herman, do you have a comment on this?
Yeah, I do. I want to just throw out there one major component we're not talking about is the library. When we approached this earlier, we thought there would be grant funds to help construct the library, and it's pretty clear those aren't there. And so when we think about moving forward on this housing project, where do we come up with the $5 to $8 million it's going to take to reconstruct the library? And do we reconstruct that library? That's what we want to get from council. Is we're happy to move forward, but we have no way to fund that library as a current. Save TIF, right? And we'd have to do a pro forma to see if TIF would pay for that or pay for some of it.
Yeah, we're in a situation here where the library 2 or 3 years ago was in a better position, and at that time when they were trying to put together a funding for their new Birch Bay library, when that failed a vote of the public, they came up with $1.5 million to do a smaller version of it just out of their own library funds. But fast forward to now, we're coming into where the library is gearing up to have to go back to the voters to change their levy cap. Because you have to ask the voters each time to undo that cap that allows them to only raise by 1% per year unless the voters say so. So this is the worst possible time for the library to kind of look at their books and find a way of squeezing out $2 million towards this. So it becomes the city's problem on this, because a lot of how the Whatcom Library system works is the individual communities own the building. The Whatcom County Library System just supplies the books and the librarians. And that's the deal we have here. This is our building over here that they bring librarians and books for. So although it would be very desirable to have this big new building, and that's part of how the whole idea is that we have the skate park, this big gigantic parking lot, and the library all in continuous piece. It's like, let's just build something big with the library in it. But as Mr. Herman's pointing out, where do we get some of that money started? Or how can we finance it? Do we go to the voters? Do we find grants? And I thought that part of Mr. Schistler's role during this leading up to now was to try and look at some of those options are to the city. Do I understand his role correctly here?
Madam Mayor.
Mr. Schistler did look at some of those, and there aren't many, if any, out there. That was our conversation, is that funding for a library would probably fall back onto the taxpayers of the community. And to put it in perspective, Mount Vernon, just their community of 35,000, they just completed their library at a cost of $61 million, right? So there's some scale there, but they're expensive.
Yeah, Mount Vernon's, what, 15 times the size of the town as we are?
No, I said they're 35,000. So
well, 35,000?
Maybe 7?
7 times as big of a
six
town.
6 times.
Okay. And they're in a project of how many?
61 million.
60 million. So we're relatively to that, we'd be an $8 million project would match that proportion.
Could we not? Like, I see in the previous pictures they had inside the building, they had like corner of the building, but I think it was a whole bottom floor for that library. I don't know. But to me, we really need the house, and we need the people downtown, and we need the library. So instead of building a whole different library, if we could incorporate that into the same one building, you know, not one big building, maybe two, but one corner of one, and then down the road, we can build our $61 million library if that, but right now, we're just not in that position. And do we want to go out and build something half-assed? So to me, it's still accomplished what they're trying to do. We make all the you know, Wi-Fi stuff you need or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. But I just think that would help a lot instead of building a whole new. We're not in that position. We need a position where we got money. We need money. I mean, we need taxpayers.
So, council, this is the opportunity for Blaine to go dig on this project. Don't put the brakes on, put the accelerator on. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of but-fors going forward. And I'm sure we're going to find a lot of experts to be able to handle those but-fors. But this is the opportunity that we have right now to go big, go correctly. Of course, library. Of course, housing. And housing for people who work at Starbucks or who are at the, who are going to be working at the businesses that are going to start to come to Blaine. Okay, so this is going to be a cultural center. It's going to be a draw. And again, it's not going to just be housing. It's going to be, it has to be the library.
And some startups will not site in Blaine unless they say, well, where are all our people who are going to be at the bottom of the wage scale that will be living? And we've had businesses show up here and say, $2,500 a month for a one bedroom is as good as it gets around here. We need to put a business somewhere where the people who want to work for us who are just sweeping the hallway can live somewhere nearby.
Absolutely.
This is
absolutely
one of the reasons why we don't have the businesses. There's no place to live in Blaine, it's expensive. The people that can afford those more expensive apartments have enough money to go buy a house in San Diego. They don't need to live in an apartment.
This is going to be hard to get the right project.
Hard.
But I have one concern about you presenting a new project. It's more, if I understand correctly, the new drawings show three buildings. The library standalone?
Yeah.
That's more expensive than the original
project. Well, if I could, I wouldn't necessarily get pulled into the drawings too far. Like, if we look at this one up here on the screen, let's see, boom, that. Think of it like, you know, three different opportunities to phase the project, right? So the library doesn't have to look like anything like that at all. It could be another building that looked like the other buildings in the background, you know, with apartments above it. And maybe it happens in like three phases. You build the first building in the back by the skate park with a childcare facility if you wanted. You build a building in the middle, and then you finally, once we get this thing figured out and the tax increment finance program maybe is running, we build the last building, right?
So this new drawing I actually opposed because the whole point of it to me was you've got all that footprint, you could have housing above it. The amount of housing you could have if you just carried that, if those two buildings were one big thing, is you could have the entire footprint of the library. It could be two stories of additional housing. So I actually oppose the way that this is starting to go with this drawing. There was a previous drawing that was all in one. On one big unit. I think this is poor use of the footprint, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was in like three floors. Of,
yeah.
And yeah, that's it's got to be. See, and you can make the library nice. You can make the whole bottom floor like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, make it beautiful and make it look really like stand out.
Yep.
Not like that. That's nice. That looks plain, but you could really make it stand out. And then yeah, that housing.
And for the record, if Mike Hill and I are agreeing, it must be true.
So, Council. If I could, to kind of keep us on task a little bit,
of course.
I think what we would like to maybe get out of council is what kind of level of affordability. I mean, it sounds like there's some support for the project, but
yeah.
Like,
do you need a motion?
Well, we don't. We're outside of a regular session, but it could be a broad statement, something like, you know, a healthy mix of income levels, you know, or we want to focus on the 80 to 120%. Or we want, you know, a different level, like maybe 50-50, 50% market rate, 50% afford, like, you know, and I think we'd be establishing like some guidelines for staff to work with the project team to kind of come back. Like, we're not picking finite numbers, we're looking for some guidance.
I would say like a pyramid. The base of the pyramid is going to be under the 80%. And then moving up to when you get to 120, you're like tippy top. So you're going to have the massive apartments be under the medium income, and as you move up, you get slightly more expensive, and then
somehow
up to 10 house.
Yeah.
Mr. Harmon.
Unfortunately, you didn't have the opportunity to see our financial projections tonight because Jennifer is sick. But the reason we scheduled that prior so you had an understanding of what the reality was, And what you would have seen is in 2027, our fund balances are going into the negative. We may be in a position to staff reduce in 2027 and things like that. And so while I agree dreaming big is nice, we're literally looking at how do we pay the bills, how do we make payroll, how do we do some of those things. And right now, I don't know how we would build and construct an $8 million library, save grants, endowments, and those things. Is it possible? Sure. But I just want to, you haven't seen that financial projection yet, and I would encourage you to review that before we take any final action on housing to see, you know, what we're going to do to our taxpayers and our ratepayers with utility fees, et cetera, that all are in the negative and have structural deficits, some today and certainly all in 27. So keep that in mind.
I'm pretty sure none of this council is suggesting taking general fund pothole filling, policeman paying money and putting it into this project. I think the idea is to get something that's shovel ready and then figure out how to make it fund itself in something other than taking it out of our coffers.
One of the primary tools to fund it would be through a referendum, right? And that's going to put an additional tax back on taxpayers as we move forward. And it's something to think about.
So you said we couldn't do it as it is presented, but in the phased approach, where we just build one apartment building and leave the other two, or whatever we decide on, do you feel that's possible?
Whatever. If you were going to use TIF, it may be possible. We haven't run a TIF pro forma. In some very rough back of the napkin numbers, I came up with $16 million for a 40-unit complex today. Again, that's very, very rough. So we could back into what that would generate on a TIF if the city wanted to go and borrow for our library, but we're not there yet. We wanted to see where you're at. But
would that be the city as the landlord? You're saying, like, okay.
No, the city would be the recipient of the increment, right, to pay a debt service on the library.
Right, okay. But I'm just saying, if we had a combined thing like what I was just talking about, where on top of the library is two stories of a much bigger building going taking up and being tall like that. Obviously, we want to build a library. We'd have to partner in with something like a for profit business or a nonprofit or something. Some other partner.
Whoever owns that building is going to be paying property tax.
Yes. Like
if it's Colchin, they're going to be paying some level of property tax. That increment would come back to the city to pay the debt on whatever we borrowed for a library.
Yeah.
Now, what we're saying is if the city phased it, that establish your TIF district so that the frozen base is locked tomorrow, so to speak, and unit one, all of that new increment gets captured in the TIF, so it helps fund the library and the debt service moving forward.
So a little bit of background, talked to Christine Perkins. She's an executive director of Auckland Library Systems. She suggested creating a field trip to go down to Mount Vernon, and sometime in the future I would like to have City Council, Planning Commission, individuals, anybody, any other interested parties to go down information gathering. So there's no question being realistic is part of the equation. Absolutely, it always is. But, and I'm going to try to hold back saying, guys, just do the impossible, okay? I'm thinking it, but I won't say it. So I still want to we have to go big. We have to go big. I realize this is going to be hard. It's going to take a lot of critical support from the public to do this, but this is the way to go. So press on the accelerator is what I would say.
Is the Mount Vernon project a mixed use or a standalone library?
From what I read, just a quick read, they put a commercial kitchen in it, several EV charging stations, and they build it to a passive standard, which if any of you are familiar with a passive home, they, instead of a 6-inch wall, they have a 12-inch wall. The claim is that you can heat them with a hairdryer, these passive homes, and they built the entire building to that standard, is what I read on their website today.
But there's residences in that building, it's not just a library?
Okay. My understanding is it's just a library and parking garage.
Yeah. And parking garage, yeah. So, if I could, yeah. So we're doing, you know, we got about 18 minutes or so to our regular meeting starts.
There's been some discussion about a level of affordability. I think that's good. It does sound like there's some interest in talking more about how to get a, you know, potential library community civic center figured out. You know, so to do that, you know, you could ask staff to look into TIF. I mean, we've only done some rough, you know, really just, I mean, we haven't even really studied it at all. So that would, you know, be the kind of maybe one of the things to think about asking us to do. And then, you know, where do we land on this affordability thing, right? Okay, yes.
One thing I would try to do if we do this project, and there's three buildings, we should start, maybe give Colson 72 feet on the first one, the farthest one back, and then go 60, and then go 48, you know, because if you try to sell that water view on the top floor, as soon as you put up the next building, it's gone, right? And that's what floor is going to, people that got money are going to want to be up there. And so I think that makes a lot of sense. And I'll, you know, one more story back there.
I'd like to dovetail on that. If this could just be one big unit where the library is on the ground floor, the part that's where it currently sits, I wouldn't mind there being a code amendment to allow yet another story, because it's not blocking anybody's view but Cane Creek there. The part where the actual skate park is, the part would be in the back. Let's go 72 or something like that. I would request that if this were to move forward, a code change there, so it could be tiered, like Councilmember Hill was just saying, where you got like five stories there, four stories there, so that there's tons of opportunities to sell premium view places on the tops of it all, and then you fill in all the under with your workforce housing. I think that would be a win-win design.
Well, Madam Mayor. No, you guys are the right group to figure that out. You know, so we could process. I mean, we just did a big downtown zoning, you know, advisory group text message. Well, we could bring that back and dovetail it in. You know, probably next year's work program. I would request, you know, with the comp plan going on and everything. But this project is going to take a couple of years to probably get off the ground, anyways, right? But so we can work with that.
Absolutely. Given the fact that education is on the chopping block right now, libraries are going to become even more important. It's just, it has to be part of the equation.
But it sounds like it'd be the last thing to be built.
Yeah, why couldn't they do it opposite? I was wondering that. Why couldn't they do that first? And then go to the next building, because then you have the road in front of you, you have everything. Mm-hmm. If that thing's going in the back, when you start working on these other ones, you're going to be driving through a lot of them, a different road. You probably told me a different
road. It's the financing, yeah. So,
yeah. Yeah.
The answer is it could, right? I go back to that would be a referendum of the voters. If the voters say, we want to tax ourselves additionally for our new library, and we want this allow the city to borrow, pick the number, $5, $7, $8 million, we actually could. But so that's about the only way it could be done.
The middle school bond just failed here, and the middle school is in desperate need of repair. It's actually even a safety issue. But even if this were in two buildings where you've got what I was suggesting, let's increase the height limit, the back part with a bunch of luxury stuff on there, but with it clearly stated right from square one, only the top two floors are going to retain that view because we're planning to build the rest of it, and so that no one gets surprised. But that could, that and so and getting a TIF on the whole entire piece of property, then building the one with the highest views first and getting that money in hand from a bunch of people coming in and just plain buying those premium condos, then wouldn't there be all, then would that generate a bunch of the income to get it continue with what I would call the second bit of it, which would be the middle bit and the rest of it with the library underneath it as another unit. Would that make some sense?
Yes.
Okay.
And yeah, when it comes to referendums, it's going to be a matter of all hands on deck and blame.
Yes. No, I think the luxury view condo money plus, again, TIF in advance of it all would generate a certain amount of cash to get a lot of this in motion. That's my estimation. Tell me if I'm wrong.
My two cents is it's under this administration, nobody's going to vote for that referendum.
So
we're all seeing our 401ks vanish, and we don't know what's going to be here tomorrow.
Madam Mayor, so we got 12 minutes. We're doing good on time, you know. But is there some direction from council to have staff look into the tax increment financing option down here and come back maybe 3 to 5 to 6 months?
What's your guys' guess at how much money if you took the whole entire piece of property, this skate park, parking lot, current library, that whole entire piece? What's your estimate of how much money we'd be able to do a TIF on?
Well, that's something we prefer to study, I think.
No, I'm asking for a guess.
As you work, I'll put together a guess.
Okay.
For right now. And so then, okay, so I'm hearing a healthy mix of income levels. You know, is there, you know...
Can you change that around? I mean,
how so?
Say if you put them up, this is a bonehead question, but
yeah.
You put them up premium, and if they all sell great... If they don't, you move them down. Is that kosher or is that?
Well, is I think that'd be very difficult to like figure out how to finance it. I mean, technically, you could convert a market rate unit to an affordable unit later, but this housing's kind of at a premium. If you make them all market rate, they'll probably all sell at market rate.
We should get some advice from some. Just let them sit in here and just tell us.
If you want those businesses to come, we need to have housing for their employees, and they're not going to be the expensive.
Right, but we could sell some fancy stuff on the top that could subsidize the workforce housing below it. And my impression has always been around here is that, the one way up top of the view, yes, we can sell it. That's the impression I've gotten from the developers and realtors in this town.
So I'm hearing like an element of market rate, but mostly affordable housing.
Yeah.
And I got that from Mr. Schisler when he explained the math on some of his original concepts.
Yeah. So,
what's the counter city's advice? What's your advice from personal opinion?
My advice is that we ask the market to give us some proposals, that we go out and we say, the city's vision is to use this property to develop housing. We would like a blend of workforce housing, we'd like a blend of 80% AMI, 100 AMI, market rate housing. Give us your proposals, give us your ideas, and let the private sector tell us what they could do with that property. And then we could evaluate those and see if any of those fall into what our vision for that property is.
Or we can even ask back to them, hey, could you change it this one a little way, would it still
work? Absolutely. If we get something close, then we can work with, whether it's Colshin or whether it's Joe Developer, it doesn't matter. We can work with them to tweak that if we want to up the affordable housing or decrease the market housing. I think we should let the market tell us what their vision for it is.
Yes. That's, we keep on some guardrails. We say it's got to be this kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be in favor of it.
Yeah.
So we have the option of requesting proposals from developers to do this. And we also have the option of continuing to work with the current partnership group and asking them to tailor to our wants.
Wouldn't some of these people we're talking about bringing in, I would imagine they'd love that we've already got some drawings. I'm just saying I don't like that drawing I pointed out the other, but some of those earlier drawings, or some of our basic, we're not starting entirely from scratch. I'm betting that some of the potential partners would like that we're not starting from scratch. And they go, what is it you guys want? It's like, look, we got some drawings, we got some ideas already, and then that might be attractive to us.
Okay.
So I would like to put forward, and let us know how you feel, that we advise staff to go ahead and investigate the TIF, and also to do this proposal to put it out to the market. Anybody opposed?
So we do make motions at the
pre-meeting, but yeah, the directions to staff, like you just gave, is certainly there.
Everybody in favor of that?
What's
to go and have staff study the TIF issue, and also do as Mr. Winger has said, take it out to the market and show them the plans and see what they say.
And I think there's a sense of council, like I said, to utilize the space directly above the library, not to have just the library with a roof and nothing above it. That's a big waste of the footprint.
That's an expensive way.
Yeah, and I think we have a sense of council agreement on that.
Agreed.
And that sounds great, and we're looking for, you know, a mostly affordable housing development with a healthy mix of incomes.
Yes. Yes. And with is there anyone on the council that disagrees with my idea of making the farthest part from the water, getting a code amendment to make that even taller, go above 60 feet in that particular place? No,
I think that makes sense, because we know it's least expensive with the additional floors.
and that's the stuff you get the most money for, which so the developer's going to say, come and say, oh, wow, we can go up to 72 feet on the farthest part. I can work with that. That's what I'm thinking, yeah. Of making that track.
Sometimes, though, I don't know, they'll tell. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, because sometimes if you go over a certain...
Oh, yeah, you need to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm kind of more for the elevator, but I don't know what the height is.
Well, what I'm saying is, we could offer them this. Would it help to go there? But yes, you're right. Sometimes then they need thicker footings and all sorts of...
So we'll continue. If I may, we will consider, you know, 12 additional feet for the back part.
That's what I'm saying. You can say if it would help, we could do that, and then they can figure that out. Like you've said, Mr. Harmon, let them tell us whether it works.
Mayor, I've got some very rough numbers.
Oh, great.
Very rough. Okay.
For sure.
Debt service on $8 million at 5.5% for 20 years would be approximately $660,000 annual debt service payment. If we pulled in $3,000 in property tax per unit, and we had 80 units, that's $240,000 in TIF debt service to go toward that $660,000 payment. We'd still be shy, roughly $400,000 to make debt service on an $8 million building. Those are real rough numbers.
Is there a limitation on time that makes it work that way? I thought if you had more money, you'd just be paying a longer time.
Typically, we match our debt service to the useful life of the facility. 20 years is a good, okay. I mean, if you stretch that out to 30 years, the debt service would drop to 550. So we're about 300,000 short, but we're borrowing for 30 years.
So TIF wouldn't solve the whole thing, but would you say that it would be worthwhile having it as part of the way it's funded?
Certainly. I think you would need to get there with endowments and grants. Because, candidly speaking, coming up with $400,000 in the general fund for debt service would be very challenging.
I don't think anyone up here wants to do that. So, but I was just saying, would TIF be better? Would it be better to have TIF involved in this or not?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it'd be a benefit, and then we figure out other things to top the rest of that off.
Okay. And we'd have a project that we could go shop and try to get, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, the TIF, what's that legal word you kept using for the prospectus or whatever?
Pro forma.
So having the pro forma in the package of, hey, here's the homework we've already done, that's helpful, right?
Okay. And if these condominiums are worth potentially more, you know, that closes the gap too, right?
Right.
So, well, we're about out of time.
I have one more quick question. Considering the comprehensive plan, do you have staff to perform this?
Well, the best part about this is the project team's going to be helping us out, and I'll work with the city manager. You know, we'll hopefully divvy up some of this work a little bit.
And I thought in the slideshow here, I thought I saw $200,000 in one slide and $150,000 in another. So there's some other people's money already funding some stuff like this, isn't there?
Well, yeah, a lot of that money went towards, you know, developing, you know, project costs and renderings and architects, and got us this far.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the study session is finished at 5:58.